Arkansans organized in response to the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Business leaders say they're cautiously optimistic as the Supreme Court strikes down new tariffs, and a new show highlights the culinary delights of the natural state. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Brain, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Over the last year, grassroots organizations have popped up across the country in response to a nationwide immigration crackdown. The Arkansas Advocate's Antoinette Grajeda has more about how groups in the natural state are adapting to meet the needs of their immigrant neighbors.
Rosita Lopez has been a community organizer for more than 15 years and says she's never seen neighbors banding together to support immigrants like they have recently. When stores and restaurants closed nationwide in January to protest the Trump administration's immigration crackdown, many Arkansas businesses could not afford to do so because they'd already been shuttered for days following a severe winter storm that prompted a state of emergency. Instead, several reopened and donated thousands to immigrant advocacy groups who provide a variety of services, including translating legal materials into multiple languages.
Just the sheer amount of support and like the willingness of businesses to really say what they stand for. So it was really beautiful to see that.
The experience highlights how Arkansans are supporting the work of grassroots groups that formed in response to the national immigration crackdown and are adapting to immigrants' needs amid rapidly changing policies. Northwest Arkansas, which has one of the state's larger immigrant populations, is home to Alliance for Immigrant Respect and Education, or ADRE. Over the last year, the group has focused on education and advocacy by sharing information, such as how to interact with law enforcement or set up a power of attorney. The group recently launched an initiative to deliver groceries to immigrants afraid to drive because of increased law enforcement in Springdale, one of the state's most diverse cities. Lopez, a member of ADE's leadership team, says despite the fear and anxiety within the immigrant community, there's also that bit of hope that people are really starting to understand what's happening. President Donald Trump's second term has been punctuated by increased ICE activity nationwide that's resulted in protests, violence, calls for reform, and a partial government shutdown. Several Arkansas businesses that stayed open on the nationwide shutdown day donated to ADE, and Lopez says they'll use the money to support their work, which includes translating materials into Spanish, Marshallese, Arabic, and Korean.
The thing with this work is we never know what's going to change because things are constantly changing. And so we're constantly having to pivot to things that we didn't foresee.
In Arkansas, one such change resulted from a 2025 state law that requires the Division of Correction and County Sheriffs to participate in the federal 287G program, which allows state and local law enforcement to perform specific immigration duties. The law requires participation in one model of the program that permits local law enforcement to serve administrative warrants on immigrants in their custody. Arkansas State Police entered an agreement to participate in a different model of the 287G program that allows them to enforce limited immigration authority during their routine police duties. These partnerships have increased immigration enforcement in Arkansas without bringing more ICE agents to the state, according to Cynthia Martinez, Field Director for Intransitive, a Central Arkansas organization that supports transgender Arkansans, especially migrants of color. Following Trump's election, Intransitive expanded its support to all migrants with the launch of its immigration-focused initiative, Migra Watch. With state law enforcement's new immigration authority, Martinez says migrants are often detained while driving.
We had one case where this guy had a flat tire and he was on the side of the road and a street trooper pulled up and the first question he asked was where country are you from? And he was deported, you know, within 2 weeks.
Since launching Migra Watch last year, Intransitive has created a volunteer-run ICE sightings hotline, hosted educational meetings, and accompanied migrants to ICE check-ins and immigration and traffic court. Martinez says the group's main focus has been deportation defense, which includes helping people who've been detained by connecting them with a lawyer or raising money for bond. She says one goal of the group's work has been building a culture of participatory community defense, where people don't have to be part of a formal group, but they can feel knowledgeable enough to support their immigrant neighbor. The intention of current immigration enforcement is to create fear and anxiety, Martinez says, but families shouldn't give up when a loved one is detained.
Just don't lose hope. As much as it does feel very like they are hunting us, that's definitely a feeling that community has, like they're hunting, and maybe it almost feels inevitable that they're gonna come for all of us, but just not to lose hope, and that know that there is, there haven't family members have been able to come out.
Highlighting the impact of immigration enforcement in the state is a priority for Arkansas GRITA. Short for Grassroots Initiative for Transparency and Accountability, Arkansas GRITA is a community-led journalism project that launched in January. Editor and researcher Olivia Pascal, a Rogers native currently earning her doctorate in Virginia, says she's working with Arkansas-based journalists focused on reporting investigative and data stories.
This is a lens that we should be looking through to understand like what's going on in this place that we like live in, that we love, that we're connected to. You can't understand like this place without looking at it through the lens of immigration and migration and, you know, all of these kind of like we are connected transnationally in all of these ways. And that's actually really important to understand.
Northwest Arkansas is the current focus of the volunteer-led newsroom, but Pascal says they hope to expand to statewide coverage. Pascal says having more news outlets in the state provides more places for people to tell stories they want to or that need to be told. When there's only a handful of people or organizations, she says the discourse is limited because you don't have a wide range of stories being told because there's no capacity.
One of the things that you're seeing with this like kind of flowering of organizations like ours, kind of, and then more kind of like for the activist groups and in the region and in the country, is just like people are responding to a moment of crisis where there's a lack of information, there's a lack of organization, and there's real needs.
While larger immigrant focus groups have existed for years, Lopez says smaller grassroots organizations can provide a level of trust that's sometimes missing from larger groups. As members of the communities they're serving, she says the smaller organizations oftentimes better understand local nuances and dynamics. Fighting together for your community and advocating for those who can't advocate for themselves are lessons Lopez says her mother instilled in her at a young age. Though she's grateful to Arkansans rallying to support their immigrant neighbors, Lopez laments the seriousness of the situation.
For me personally, it seems like, why did it have to get this bad for more people to become engaged? We've been saying this for years, like, you know, it's been bad for years, and it had to get this bad for a lot of people to start paying attention.
That was the Arkansas Advocate's Antoinette Grajeda reporting. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled against the implementation or continuation of many of President Trump's tariffs. In response, the president signed a proclamation for a temporary global tariff of 10%, but a post on Truth Social indicated the president's global tariff could be 15% instead. KUAF's Kyle Kellums has more on how local businesses are reacting to the uncertainty.
It wreaks havoc.
Boyd Everett is the CEO of Northwest Arkansas-based Harvest Revenue Group, or HRG. His firm works with many large consumer packaged goods companies to recover lost revenue, streamline financial processes, and prevent future losses. HRG is a sort of liaison between his clients and the largest retailers in the world. Everett says a year's worth of discussion and enforcement of tariffs can be, at the least, unsettling for his clients. Everett says his consumer electronics clients have been hesitant to pass costs associated with tariffs along to customers.
And you think about it, they're in the part of the world where they're getting hit the hardest, right, with the tariffs. But in the mindset of the consumer electronics supplier, they don't want to lose market share, right? And the margins are so thin, that you can go upside down so quickly. And one of the greatest fears, there's a lot of fears, but one of the greatest fears in consumer electronics is you'll sit on inventory. It just, the nature of the beast of electronics is things after you launch something, the typical life cycle of a major TV is usually 18 months from launch to clearance.
And any hiccups during those 18 months could mean selling items eventually for less than the cost of manufacturing them, not methodology that is sustainable. Everett says Friday's court decision may have some initial solace, although since many consumer electronics interests have declined to pass along tariff-related costs at the retail level, consumers so far haven't felt a hit.
But if you own stock in a consumer electronics company, you have felt that hit. So in that area, I would say for people who are investing or looking at their 401ks, those companies that play in that space will feel some relief.
Everett says the environment surrounding tariffs injects a new level of uncertainty into an already delicate atmosphere for many large and small businesses. And prolonged uncertainty, he says, can mean exponential challenges.
We saw COVID expose how things can get upside down in the supply chain and due to the uncertainties because they didn't know what we had. We had one client that had product on the warehouse. They had everything to make that product except the labels. And you can't ship that. I mean, you think of that's the cheapest piece, and that prevented them from shipping. They were canceling orders because they were waiting for the labels to be printed. So I would say that the American economy, the world economy, is so fine-tuned to that just-in-time stock keeping, right? You don't want to have any excess inventory on the shelf or in the back room or in your warehouse.
So he says when a supplier goes to a major retailer, that retailer is interested in items the supplier has, the price of those items, and importantly, how many of those items do the companies think they'll be able to sell? Not surprisingly, such forecasts were decimated during the pandemic. Uncertainties, like those that can be associated with a pandemic or with tariffs, can make forecasting difficult.
It's as important to tell the retailer what we think your profit margin is going to be, right? Here's the suggested retail. Here's the cost we're selling to. They're going to want to know what the turn is. How many weeks does it take to sell through what's on that shelf? And if saying it's a two-week turn, it ends up being 4 or 6 weeks, you could end up losing shelf space, which is like you get into a death spiral when you start surrendering shelf space.
Everett says Friday's 6-3 Supreme Court ruling could provide some quick positives.
You're basically having a situation, it's almost similar to when the oil prices drop, right? Then the transportation drop, all that drops. But you're talking, which those are incidental, they're important incidental fees. But when you're talking about the price it makes to cost it to make something, the price to manufacture something drops, to me, it's probably on a greater magnitude than it would be for the drop in oil. So I think it would be several orders of magnitude higher from an impact of a fuel price decline versus the cost of goods. So I think cautiously optimistic that this is going to be a boon for consumers. But, you know, the old saying in the military that a plan never survives first contact with the enemy, a pundit's opinion never survives first contact with reality.
The president's announcement that he plans to continue global tariffs through other means indicates there isn't an imminent arrival of certainty on the horizon. Everett says he thinks continued uncertainty could mean companies that aren't now paying the tariffs that have been collected the past few months might not be quick to let go of any immediate savings.
Unfortunately, that's one of the downsides of having this continued conversation. So think back to during maybe the past two or three administrations where there was a lot of uncertainty, right? With when you had the banks failing, right? And the TARP funds and all of that, a lot of companies sat on money, right? They got cash, they got TARP funds, but they just didn't do anything with it because they wanted to see where things were going to go.
And it doesn't appear there will be confidence one way or the other about the direction of tariffs anytime soon. Monday, President Trump wrote on social media that countries wanting to alter tariff arrangements in the wake of the Supreme Court decision could end up facing even higher tariffs.
That was KUAF's Kyle Kellums reporting. Taste Buds is the name of a new program soon to premiere on Arkansas TV, formerly known as Arkansas PBS. The show's supervising producers, Tanisha Joe Conway and Eric White, gave a preview, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough.
Tanisha, we'll begin with you. Let's just start with the big picture concept. If you had to just summarize in a couple of sentences what Taste Buds is all about, what would you say?
You know, I think Taste Buds is about getting into Arkansas communities and showcasing something that most of us love, which is food. But also, even more than food, we want to talk to the folks that are making the food, the folks that are in the restaurants, the communities that have these restaurants and where people join. So Taste Buds is going to take you into Arkansas communities all over the state and introduce you to new food, but especially to some of our neighbors.
We use food as sort of a vessel to get us into these communities, as sort of like an avenue to like, oh, we're going to go talk about barbecue. But really what we're going to talk about is this 100-year-old business and all of the family and community that go along with it. And so it's really highlighting the people there and then highlighting some of their stories that don't often get told. Unless you live in those communities and know those people, you may not know some of these stories. And so that's really been eye-opening for us and also really like heartfelt. Like a lot of these stories are very sweet and wonderful, and just getting to visit with these people has been a blast.
How have you found that community connections are made around food in restaurants?
So we went and visited with the Dixie Pig in Blytheville, and it just so happened there was some families that came through. They don't even live in Blytheville anymore, but they just happened to be there during that time. And they got very emotional, like visiting back with these people, because it had been, it's like a sense of nostalgia that comes with it, but it's also a sense of like coming home. So there's a sense of like family and really feeling embraced by the people that feed you. And so like that is, everyone has to eat. So it feels like there is like this basic human connection there, that food is sort of like connects us to the larger community in which we live.
Absolutely. I think the other part is, you know, how amazing is it to share a meal? You know, that's a special experience that all of us, you know, enjoy and share, whether it's sharing a meal with a family, sharing a meal with a friend. You know, some of these are community leaders, like Eric mentioned, you know, looking at the footage from the Dixie Pig, you know, and folks are really emotional. I mean, it's like that connection to when I was a child eating here, but not only that, just coming here with friends or the memories that they share. And so we're just really excited to bring this program to air.
Well, with this program being about the communities that are made around food, are you focusing in specifically on food that's unique or associated with Arkansas, or just kind of the food that you can find in Arkansas, or is it a little bit of both? Tanisha?
You know, I think it is, you know, kind of a little bit of both, but, you know, a lot of it is we didn't go specifically in choosing foods. Now, we want a variety in the shows. We want a variety of different types of food, but we just kind of look, making sure we're all over the state, you know, making sure that we're in all varying communities and those sorts of things. So, yes, the food is there. There will be a variety of food, but we didn't pick it, you know, intentionally. You know, just to say we have to have a barbecue in this one, or we didn't do it that way. But we did make sure after the fact, we want to make sure and cover a broad range of foods and communities.
And we knew some of the history of some of these places. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the Dixie Pig again, but they had been around for 100 years. Star of India here in Little Rock has been 30 plus years on and was maybe the first Indian restaurant in the state. So we knew there was some history involved with some of the places here. And so that sort of was like, maybe we consider them, maybe we figure them out. But really we were looking for really like good stories, places that have been around, parts of the state that don't often get featured. So, you know, we're based in Central Arkansas. And so a lot of the stories we end up telling are from Central Arkansas. So we really wanted to get out to the different quadrants of the state and focus on stories in the Delta, focus on stories in Northwest Arkansas, Northeast Arkansas, and really find all those places that are built for the people in those communities.
Yeah. And I think to add on to that, you know, when we first started working on this project, you know, we put it out in public. We were like, hey, you know, let us know, you know, which restaurants do you like in your area? Where do we need to go? You know, let us know, because we don't know, you know, and who doesn't, isn't looking for a restaurant? Where do I eat when I'm traveling to a certain space or going through an area? That's one of the huge questions, right? It's like, where are we going to stop and eat? Where are we going to have lunch? Where are we going to have dinner? And we did receive, you know, really over between our staff and folks sending us suggestions, we got 300 to 500 restaurants just all over the state that folks were like, hey, check, you know, you need to go here. If you're in our area, you need to stop here, you know, whatever. And so that's what we're using to kind of, you know, pull together and find different places to go. So needless to say, this show could go on for a long time. You know, we'd be excited about going and eating and getting into the community.
I love the fact that there are so many places that are close to people's hearts in our state. But I want to come back. Eric, you had mentioned the Star of India in Little Rock and how this program focuses in on building community. I know that people who may not be familiar with Indian culture or Indian food may have the opportunity to interact and learn a little bit more about that culture by eating at this restaurant. Have you found that in your travels and going to restaurants, you're finding people crossing paths in a restaurant that may would never have crossed paths anywhere else in their communities, Eric?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I think Star of India is like a really good example of that. I mean, the Sammy Law, who owns the restaurant, he's owned it and operated it for the 30 plus years that it's been there. His motto is welcome home. And everyone who comes through the door is family for him. And everyone who eats there is family. And so it's that providing of food for a loved one. It's that sharing a plate, you know. And so I think a lot of like cross-cultural and people who wouldn't normally eat Indian food find themselves there because they feel so welcomed. And so I think that is better than any dish you could have. I think having that sense of community and that sense of like family is, we can't measure it.
Well, I think it's kind of, it feeds more than just, you know, the belly. It like, it feeds the soul, it feeds the spirit, you know, to share a meal with somebody, to hear their stories, to hear how their day's gone, or in this instance, you know, how the restaurants came to be or why they're there, or their philosophy of what they serve and how they serve it.
Well, there are probably hundreds of thousands of restaurants in America. Did you find anything unique about the restaurant culture, perhaps here in the state of Arkansas, that may be a little bit different than if you go somewhere else? Or did you find some things that were in common?
You know, we have this culture of food equals love. And so if they're in there preparing that meal, I mean, I think you get that joy from Sammy or that history from the folks at the Dixie Pig or even at Mud Street, which is also in that first episode. I think we, for me, it was seeing that those connections that they brought. And I don't know about other restaurants where it's like we're worried about making sure we keep the Michelin star or we're making sure that, you know, we're hitting a certain level of culinary cuisine or whatever. In that, this is, it tends to be about the love of food, the love of sharing, the love of being there for my community. You know, it's like, how can I help to push that forward? And that seems to be what we're finding, is that, you know, there is a lot of care and a lot of attention that's put into this food to bring in and enjoy the folks that are around you.
That was Tanisha Joe Conway and Eric White, supervising producers of the new show Taste Buds, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. A preview episode will air on Arkansas TV on Thursday, March 5th at 7 p.m., with additional episodes coming later this year. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.